And so, Edgar Cayce explained that her soul, her inner self, was being purified by her experiences lifetime after lifetime. Slowly, she was undergoing a transformation. She was changing and growing in her level of awareness, so that someday she would be in perfect harmony with the Creator of the universe. To fulfill that great purpose for life takes time. More time than just 60, 70, or 80 years. The reading explained that her soul was being given many opportunities to learn and grow. Like the cycles of nature, her soul had experienced many earthly deaths and rebirths. But life itself is continuous, and over a series of lifetimes, she was gradually coming into a more enlightened awareness. Edgar Cayce provided her with details about several past lives. One took place in the 19th century during the westward expansion in America. Her soul had lived as a pioneer. Her poems and songs had often lifted the spirits of fellow travelers in those days. She was frequently a strong positive influence for hope to family and companions. Those efforts now had a carryover into the current lifetime. Many of the people who were most helpful to her career as a professional singer were the same souls whom she'd aided in the previous lifetime. Next, Cayce described a lifetime in ancient Greece, in the days when the Roman Empire was expanding. In that period, many Roman leaders were interested in adopting some of the best features of Greek culture. Her soul was born as a Grecian citizen who grew up to be very helpful in this transfer. She had exemplified many of the highest qualities of Greek society and helped the Romans see how they could be applied in Roman culture, qualities such as honesty, purity of purpose, and beauty of the body. Those same qualities were still available in the depths of her soul, and in the current lifetime she could still draw upon them. Finally, Cayce described a third previous experience. It was in ancient times known today only as legend, the period of Atlantis, and the migration of many people to distant places such as Egypt, as Atlantis was destroyed by natural catastrophes. She had played a positive role in the mixing of the Atlantean and Egyptian cultures. Her abilities with speech had made her an effective mediator, and she was especially skilled at bringing beauty into the temple worship. Through these three past life scenarios, Cayce painted a unique portrait of this woman. She was pictured as a soul, a spiritual being on a long adventure. Her journey had been one of many positive efforts. Through a series of lifetimes, she worked and served with a common intention, to help and to bring out the best in others. And now, in the current lifetime, Cayce suggested that same desire was continuing. Her soul came into this life with a plan and a mission to perform. The reading described it as one of helping others to transform and lift their emotions. Through song, beauty, and her loving manner, she could continue the work that she'd begun many centuries ago. Reincarnation made possible that which couldn't be accomplished in a single lifetime. We might well wonder what Edgar Cayce and this young woman thought of the words that came through him on that summer afternoon in 1935. Apparently, the reading struck home for her, because correspondents later suggest that she followed much of the advice in the reading. But what did Edgar Cayce think of this reading, and the hundreds of similar ones he gave? What did he make of the theory of reincarnation? By 1935, he'd gotten used to the idea and accepted it fully in his own thinking. But when it spontaneously came through in one of his readings in 1923, it seemed like a foreign notion to him. He struggled for many years with it. Even as reincarnation was more and more frequently mentioned in his trance readings, he continued to wonder whether or not he could agree with it. A big part of the problem for Edgar Cayce, and for many of us today, related to his traditional religious beliefs. He knew that reincarnation was a part of the Hindu and Buddhist faiths, but nowhere could he find it in the Bible. Could he hold on to his own Judeo-Christian beliefs and still accept reincarnation? Slowly, Cayce came to answer that question, yes. He recognized that there were many truths that are understood in the modern world, but are not found in the Bible. electricity which makes light bulbs function, and the laws of aerodynamics which allow aeroplanes to fly. Jesus said that there were other truths beyond what he had been able to reveal to his followers. Even more importantly, Casey found in the Bible certain principles which are consistent with how reincarnation works. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. This biblical law precisely describes how we are responsible for what we have done in past lives. We are loved by God. This spiritual truth is also highly consistent with reincarnation. Casey began to see that a compassionate God would provide souls with as many chances as they might need in order to follow the path of truth and love. It didn't really seem compatible with the loving God that Casey knew for some souls to be sent to hell forever. But perhaps most important, it was what he observed that caused Casey to change his mind from skepticism to belief in reincarnation. He saw how it helped people. He recognized how his past life readings allowed individuals to gain a new perspective on themselves and on their challenges. No doubt a few people misunderstood and misused the theory. There are potential pitfalls to any hypothesis, and we'll examine some of them in a few moments. But by and large, Edgar Casey observed the constructive capacity of the reincarnationist point of view. He saw people gain new hope in the face of difficulties. He noticed lives being transformed from confusion to understanding, from guilt to freedom. In the face of all this evidence, Edgar Casey changed his mind about reincarnation and came to accept it. What understanding of reincarnation did he come to accept? Many definitions of reincarnation have been proposed over the centuries. The concept is not new and may in fact be as old as religious belief itself. Exactly what did the Casey readings mean by reincarnation? The answer to this question has several parts. First, it is a law of human experience that directs our spiritual growth. Next, it is a theory of rebirth stating that upon death, almost everyone is not yet perfected as a spiritual being and is therefore given other lifetimes to continue growth and development. We always come back in human form, never as an animal. Casey's theory goes on to say that no soul is damned forever because of its failings. But at the same time, Casey states that every soul is responsible for what it has thought and felt and done. There are consequences to our choices. So, reincarnation, according to the Casey readings, is a theory of rebirth that describes the development of something eternal within all of us. There are two sides of us, one superficial and temporary, the other more authentic and timeless. The first aspect we can call personality. It is built up within a single lifetime, but perishes upon the death of the physical body. The other side we can call individuality, the very identity of the soul. It resides in the depths of our being, and it is eternal. The individuality is not perfect yet, but it is the aspect of us that is capable of spiritual development. To take one example, let's consider Edgar Casey himself. The man Casey had a personality self. It was shaped by the times and situations in which he grew up. But living beneath that personality was an individuality, a spiritual being who had had many previous lifetimes. Casey's individuality had experienced several extraordinary lifetimes of spiritual leadership and psychic development. But in some lifetimes, abilities were misused or selfish motives predominated. Many of the talents and abilities from those lifetimes, as well as the weaknesses and shortcomings, carried over and influenced the lifetime or incarnation, which began in 1877 as Edgar Casey. From birth, his personality self began to develop. It was strongly shaped by the attitudes and practices of his parents, as well as the beliefs and values of late 19th century Kentucky, where he lived. As he grew up, some influences were felt from his individuality self. They took the form of certain interests and characteristics of his temperament with which he seemed to be born. Anyone who has watched a child grow up from infancy has observed this. Some individual characteristics seem to be inborn rather than learned. Throughout his 67-year lifetime as Edgar Casey, he knew himself primarily as his personality self. He had likes and dislikes along with various habit patterns, many of them good, but he also had faults. Like almost everyone, Edgar Casey had occasional experiences of something deeper within himself, his individuality. Those moments probably came when he prayed and meditated, when he was alone in nature, or when he performed a selfless act of love for someone. In this way, Casey was like any of us. He had a personality self that was felt almost constantly, and he had an individuality self that was usually beyond conscious awareness. What made Edgar Casey famous was that twice a day as an adult, he went into a trance state, allowing his individuality self to give a psychic reading. When Edgar Casey died in 1945, his personality self died too. But the lessons that had been learned and absorbed by his soul lived on. At a later time, this individuality self will incarnate again, perhaps as a man, perhaps as a woman. Maybe in America, maybe in another country. In the next incarnation, this soul may once again have an innate psychic talent. On the other hand, a very different kind of experience may be needed for further soul development, and no special psychic ability may be present. The same kind of process goes on within you. There are two sides of yourself. One is conscious to you. It is your familiar personality self. The other side is just as real, maybe even more real, but you experience it much less frequently. It is your individuality self, the part of you that is timeless and that reincarnates. Let's take a moment to experience just how valid this two-part distinction from the Casey readings really is. Make sure that you are in a comfortable place where you will not be interrupted for about 5 minutes. Pause the tape if you need to get resituated. Now that you are in a comfortable setting, either sitting or lying down, gently close your eyes. Feel yourself becoming more and more relaxed. Let your attention move to your breathing. All of your awareness is focused on the flowing in and flowing out of your breath. With each inhalation, you breathe in light, peace, and clarity of mind. With each exhalation, you let go of tension or stress. You are becoming more and more relaxed. You are more and more aware of who you are. But you also see how there are many sides of yourself. Take a few moments now to review the person whom you have been so far this day. In your imagination, remember what has happened to you, both the outer events and your inner reactions. All those memories are stored within your mind, and you can vividly replay them right now. in a very objective, non-judgmental way, simply review the sort of person you have been so far today. What you have done, what you have thought, and how you have felt. Perhaps you notice just how automatic many of your actions have been, and you may have seen some of your strong habit patterns of thought and feeling. What you are observing is your personality self. It probably has some nice sides, as well as a few rough edges. This is your familiar identity. What the Casey readings would call your personality. Still keeping your eyes closed, let your awareness expand. Now you can remember things from your past, too. In this relaxed and open state, memories of all your experiences from the current lifetime are available to you. From among all of these memories there for you, notice that just a few of them stand out. See how just three or four special memories come to your mind now. They are very positive ones, what you might call your peak moments of this lifetime. Some of them may be from your childhood, others from your adult years. Notice how each one is an experience where you were not your ordinary self. You saw yourself and others with different eyes. Or you may have responded in positive ways that were not typical for you. One or more of these peak experiences may have come in a dream, or in prayer and meditation. Others may have happened when you were alone in nature, or times of feeling great love or creativity. Just focus your attention inward now to remember three or four of these experiences from your past. What you are now remembering is your individuality self. From time to time in your life, you have gotten a glimpse of your more authentic self. This part of you is timeless. It is the part of you that lives from one lifetime to another, becoming more enlightened. Just take another moment and feel the reality of this part of you. Remember how it lives in you, even though it is easily forgotten in the busyness of life. Then slowly begin to bring your attention back. Let your awareness return to your breathing. With each breath, feel yourself coming back to your more familiar self. And when you feel that you are back, you can slowly open your eyes. If the experience of one's individuality self is so readily available, then why don't more people believe in reincarnation? Perhaps many people give different interpretations to this side of themselves. They don't understand it the way the Kesey readings did, as an immortal self that is slowly growing and developing from one lifetime to the next. However, it's surprising just how many people do believe in reincarnation, not only worldwide, but also in America. Recent scientific surveys indicate that somewhere between one-fourth and one-third of the adult population now admits to this belief. The increasing popularity of this theory may be related to its advantages. In other words, a system that includes a belief in many lives has benefits to offer. For example, reincarnation can help us see that things happen for a reason. There is justice in the universe. That can be reassuring, and it may allow us to be more hopeful about living. Another benefit is patience. When you believe that you have more than one lifetime, it permits you to be more relaxed as you work toward your goals. Not complacent and lazy, but instead calm and more easily able to really enjoy life, taking each day with patience. In our modern world of time pressures, that can be a big advantage. Another benefit that comes from believing in reincarnation is personal responsibility. Admittedly, some critics would say that people today don't want to be responsible for themselves. But that's probably not true of the majority of us. We want to have a sense of being in control of our own destinies. We want to feel like we can do something about our circumstances. Reincarnation shows the way in which we create our own life situations. It's a belief that is empowering and hopeful. However, just as there are advantages to the theory, there are also pitfalls. Any theory can be misused or misunderstood. Reincarnation is especially susceptible to distortion and misapplication. Let's look at four of the possible mistakes that are addressed in the Kesey readings. First is a misunderstanding of what it is that reincarnates. Many people who say they believe in the theory assume that their personality self comes back lifetime after lifetime. These people probably use the theory of reincarnation to boost their own egos, to glorify the familiar personality self. However, it is the individuality self that reincarnates. If you aren't in touch with the side of yourself that Kesey called individuality, then you don't really know the part of you that is immortal and that will live again. A second mistake we can make is to use reincarnation as an excuse to put off growth. A theory of many lives presents a temptation. Why not have a good time during this incarnation and get around to spiritual development in a future lifetime? Some people exhibit this attitude, but it's surprising how few do. Most people who accept reincarnation come to a logical conclusion. If I goof off in this lifetime, it only makes things even more difficult for me next time. So let's get on with growth and development now. A third pitfall is guilt. Here we must address a familiar word to anyone who has studied reincarnation, the term karma. The law of karma states that there are consequences to everything that we do. Every deed, every thought is something for which we are responsible. Sometimes we face up to the consequences in the current lifetime, but often it is during a later lifetime that we meet the results. This definition of karma easily brings an analogy to mind. An accounting system that keeps track of debits and credits. It's natural to think of positive results like credits on an accountant's ledger, so-called good karma. Conversely, it's easy to imagine that negative results are like debits on that ledger, what might be termed bad karma. But the notion of bad karma easily leads to feelings of guilt. We can assume that anything that goes wrong is because God is punishing us for a debt from the past. As much as all of this may make sense at face value, the Casey readings suggest it's a misleading analogy. God is not a universal accountant in the sky. Karma is not a debt or a credit. If it were, then the debt would be paid off merely by living through some unpleasantry so that the score could be evened. But sometimes a soul may spend lifetime after lifetime wrestling with the same old problems because it isn't learning a needed lesson. Instead, the best definition of karma is memory. A karmic pattern is a memory within the mind of the soul. Whether or not you can consciously recall a past lifetime, your soul mind remembers everything from the distant past. And those deep memories have a profound influence on your experiences now. They affect your physical health, your interpersonal relationships, and virtually everything else about your life situations. Later, as we look at Casey's suggestions for changing karmic patterns, we'll explore how to best deal with these deep soul memories. We'll see that the key to transforming karmic memories is to replace them with new attitudes, new emotions, and actions. A fourth mistake with reincarnation is the assumption that we can eventually perfect ourselves solely by our own efforts lifetime after lifetime. However, we need help. Certainly each soul has to try its best, but that alone will never be quite enough. Eventually, each soul needs to be assisted by the influence of grace. What is the law of grace, according to the Casey readings? It is the love of God that heals and transforms us. It is a force of spiritual awakening that is always offered to us freely. But grace is also something which we choose to put into application in our daily lives. Just as often as Casey spoke of the grace offered to us from God, Casey also spoke of our ability to live graciously, to reach out to those in need, to go the extra mile, and to be patient with others. It is not a matter of earning grace by acting this way. However, graciousness in relation to other people opens us to receive the grace of God and to experience the healing of old karmic memories. We are ready to further pursue Casey's understanding of reincarnation and karma if we can avoid these four mistakes. 1. Misunderstanding what part of us comes back from one lifetime to another. 2. Putting off growth for another lifetime. 3. Feeling guilty for karmic debts to be repaid. And 4. Assuming we can perfect ourselves. To understand more clearly exactly how reincarnation and karma work, let's examine several examples directly from the Casey readings. One story concerns a young businessman whose reading from Casey helped him understand the origins of a character trait that sometimes caused him trouble. This fault related to the occasional misuse of a very important talent. He was gifted with the spoken word, but from time to time he would stretch the truth with exaggeration. First, the reading warned him about just how powerful our words can be. It cautioned that one must give an account of every idle word spoken. Then the reading went on and gave some of the background of this tendency for overstatement. No date for the incarnation was given, but this soul had a lifetime in what is now the area along the Rhine in Europe. In his early adult life, he was a farm laborer, but an opportunity arose for him to become prominent among his people. The lands were troubled by a series of invasions from the south. This soul became a leader in the fight to successfully resist these assaults. One key aspect of his leadership strength was his ability to hold people's attention with the spoken word. The reading described how his own willfulness sometimes surfaced in the form of exaggerations and overstatements. For the most part, that lifetime long ago was a very positive one, full of growth for the soul. However, this tendency to exaggeration was a karmic pattern that carried over into the current lifetime. This particular reading is also one in which Edgar Cayce directly presented a statement of the soul's purpose for the present incarnation. This young man was told that he had the power to motivate and influence others through speech. His mission in life was to make the best possible use of this gift, both for his own benefit and that of others. It's interesting to see how Cayce paints a picture of his current lifetime. The strong tendency to exhibit a character fault is interwoven with the highest purposes of his soul. Another story concerns a middle-aged man who was a successful businessman in the timber industry. Again, we find that Cayce described a weakness that could be traced to a past life. This man had a problem making decisions. This tendency for indecision was related to a lifetime in ancient Egypt, during a period in which the native people were conquered by a society coming from the north. As the new king established his rule over the country, this soul, who was one of the native people, was given a job of great responsibility. He was a keeper of the outer gate for one of the walled cities. Each day, he would have to decide who could and who couldn't come in. Apparently, the soul felt divided loyalties between his new employer and his native people. The Cayce reading said that much bewilderment came to the entity through this period, not knowing to which group to cast the lot, indecision being the fault. And now, in its present lifetime in America, this soul is still trying to learn certain lessons about how to be decisive. The advice came with these words: be decisive in every phase, not foolishly so, but do not try, do not attempt to straddle the fence. Later in the same reading, the man receives some clues about the nature of his purpose and mission for the current lifetime. It involved a work of service that would use machines to facilitate international trade. The reading hinted that airplanes were involved and encouraged him in that direction, saying, "For we are entering that period where the air consciousness is to become the ruling force in man's experience." These stories illustrate two important facts about reincarnation. Current life problems can often be understood in terms of past life choices, and each soul incarnates with a purpose for that lifetime. The mission or purpose in life is both to overcome and heal certain karmic memories from the past, and to be of service to others. One Cayce reading emphasized the service dimension when it spoke of the purpose in life and how we grow spiritually. You approach heaven only by leaning on the arm of someone you have helped. Let's look at one more example of an individual who received a past life reading from Cayce. This is the story of a young man who heard about Edgar Cayce from a radio show called Mysteries of the Mind, which aired regularly out of New York City in the late 1930s. The man was a music teacher at a college for women, and his greatest problem was his eyesight. He wrote to Cayce requesting a reading. "I have only about 10% normal vision and do not see to recognize people and read with the aid of very powerful telescopic glasses. Not being able to read music and play at the same time, I have to memorize every piece before playing it." Among many other things, his reading from Cayce recounted a lifetime in ancient Persia. The soul lived as a barbarian who persecuted those whose beliefs did not match his own. On more than one occasion, he blinded his victims with hot irons. But later in life, he gave up this aggressive behavior when he found a teacher who brought hope and spiritual insight. He began to study music, and late in life became a kind of healer through the use of music. And now, in his current lifetime, he was directly experiencing both the good and the bad side of that Persian period. These examples show that karmic memories can come in many different forms. Four categories of karmic memory are mentioned most often in the KC readings. Four areas of life where we are most likely to experience karmic influences. The physical body, characteristics of temperament, talents, and interpersonal relationships. When we think about the physical body from a reincarnationist point of view, we must be careful. Not every illness can be blamed on a previous incarnation. Sometimes we make choices and meet the physical results very quickly. In other instances, a physical weakness or difficulty may be largely the consequence of deeds or attitudes in a past life. For example, one man with digestive system disorders was told in his KC reading that in a past lifetime he had been a glutton. There was not so much a karmic debt to be repaid as there was a memory within his soul of having abused the physical body. In the current lifetime, he was meeting the results of what he had done to his physical body in the past. If it were just a debt to be paid off, then the karma might be removed by one lifetime of digestive system discomfort. However, in Casey's view of reincarnation, the karmic memory will be transformed only when the man makes a sincere change in attitude and behavior toward his body. It might take months, or years, or lifetimes. Innate character traits are another area where we can easily observe karmic memory. Each of us is apparently born with a certain disposition. We like particular things and dislike others. Our temperaments cannot be fully explained by inheritance or childhood imitation, although those two ingredients also have a role to play. For example, a youngster may show a ready sense of humor, but can it be fully explained by a playful, fun-loving home in the child's early years? Or what about identical twins who have exactly the same genetic makeup and may have virtually the same environment? Often they will show strong differences in temperament. Talents and skills are a third category of karmic memory often mentioned by Casey. This is the side of past life influences that we are glad to have. All of us are born with natural gifts. Admittedly, some people appear to be more gifted than others, but it may well be that modern society occasionally doesn't recognize or value some of the gifts that we bring with us from past lives. Even a handicapped child is a soul who incarnates with certain talents or abilities. We need to learn how to recognize the sensitivity, the love, and the joy that may be expressed naturally through that person. And finally, our interpersonal relations are a primary way in which we encounter past life memories. Who hasn't had the experience of meeting someone new and instantly liking him or disliking him? Among Casey's definitions of karma is one that says that karma is giving way to impulse. Do you ever observe yourself acting impulsively in relationships, feeling compelled to do or say something? That kind of automatic reaction is likely to be karmic. But remember that karma is not all bad or burdensome. The people with whom we feel easy rapport are likely to be souls with whom we have worked cooperatively in the past. Those people who help us along the way may very well be those who helped us in the distant past or ones whom we have helped. Since the workings of karma sometimes seem complex or subtle, it makes sense to look for a basic pattern that summarizes its effects. Any simple direct model is bound to miss some of the details, but it can be very useful to get the overall picture of how things operate. Fundamentally, karma works in one of two ways: the repetition of patterns from past lives, or mirror opposite of past life memories. Let's consider first how souls tend to repeat patterns from one lifetime to the next. What is this principle of recurrence? The most remarkable cases are probably those in which characteristics of the physical body seem to carry over. For example, there are cases which suggest that sometimes a birthmark may be related to a physical trauma in the preceding lifetime. Dr. Ian Stevenson of the University of Virginia has conducted extensive research on this subject for more than 25 years. His investigations of evidence for reincarnation have focused on children who claim to have conscious memories of a past life. For several of these young people, the details of the past life story match a birthmark on the new child's body. Just as the physical body may show evidence of a karmic pattern repeating itself from one lifetime to another, so too can we see evidence of repetition and characteristics of temperament. A soul which has had a lifetime of power and authority may well be authoritarian in the next lifetime. However, problems can arise because frequently the conditions aren't the same. That same soul may find itself in situations where it has little power, and yet it still feels compelled to act that way. Perhaps it's easier to observe this in other people than it is to see in ourselves. All of us can probably think of someone whose personality characteristics just don't seem to match the conditions of life they find themselves in. It almost seems as if the temperament is mismatched to the person's situation. What we may be seeing is karma at work, the repetition of patterns from the past. Interpersonal relationships can also operate karmically by a law of recurrence. Souls have a tendency to behave toward each other the same way in lifetime after lifetime. Just imagine how easily relationships get into ruts in the current lifetime. In essence, nothing magical happens at death, since each soul has a continuity of life. Taking on new bodies and new personalities won't by itself change strong habit patterns. For example, Casey gave a reading for a grade school age brother and sister who had violent fights. The reading described the hostile behavior in the relationship as a repetition of the last lifetime. They had been members of opposing clans in a fierce Scottish feud. We must be careful, though, as we think about karma in relationships. Even if the karmic principle of repetition is active, where does the karma reside? Is it in the relationship, or is it within each of the individual souls? Casey's readings clearly say that you don't have karma with someone. The karmic memory is within your own soul mind, and if that memory needs to be changed and healed, then you can potentially do it with any number of different souls. You don't have to find the same soul with whom you originally created the problem. Nevertheless, you may still have a tendency to repeat patterns with the same souls lifetime after lifetime. Why is that? Probably because of what happens inside of you when you meet someone whom you've known in the past. It stimulates and draws to the surface the memories of how you thought, felt, and acted in a previous lifetime. Most likely you won't actually remember any of the details of a past life, but what you will experience is a strong impulse for the relationship to follow a certain course. One of the greatest challenges of life for most people is to deal with these inclinations to repeat attitudes and actions all over again with someone. But fortunately, the karmic rule of recurrence sometimes operates in our favor, especially when it comes to talents and abilities. For example, Casey gave a past life reading for a one-year-old boy and revealed that this soul had once been the famous composer Franz Liszt. He said that in the present lifetime there would be great opportunities to express these same musical abilities. In other words, the talented patterns of musical composition repeated themselves. The hard work and commitment from the past was reaping further rewards in a new lifetime. What is particularly interesting about this case is the advice that was directed to the parents of the one-year-old boy. They were told that these extraordinary abilities would not come forth on their own. The skills were there and could be drawn upon, but it would require training to give them the chance to express themselves. This is a very important idea from the Casey readings about positive karma. Constructive, beneficial patterns from the past may repeat themselves, but it may depend also on efforts and application. Here we can see why the Casey readings put so much emphasis on the child's experience in the home. expression of the deepest purposes and mission for which a soul is born can be greatly enhanced if parents are loving, supportive, and sensitive to the unique qualities of that newly incarnating soul. But the repetition of karmic patterns from one lifetime to the next is only half the story. There is a second way in which the law of karma is active and shapes our experiences. Sometimes karma challenges us to grow and develop spiritually by giving us the mirror opposite of what we have had in a past life. We could call this the principle of compensation or rebalance. Carl Jung, the famous pioneering psychiatrist who was a contemporary of Casey, spoke of this law of compensation, although in broader terms than merely reincarnation. Jung proposed that the human mind always tries to reestablish equilibrium. Whenever things get out of balance, forces from within ourselves try to compensate for the unevenness. Jung gave this kind of an example. If you go to some extreme in your conscious waking life, your unconscious self will try to produce the opposite extreme. This process can be observed especially in dreams. If you are shy and refuse to reveal anything about yourself, that's an extreme behavior. Because things are out of balance, your unconscious self will compensate for it and bring forth an opposite extreme in order to get you back in balance. You might have a dream in which you are naked in a public place. The purpose of the dream is not guidance to strip off your clothes in public. Instead, it's a reminder to find a point of equilibrium and balance in the area of self-disclosure. The Casey readings on reincarnation suggest that a similar process can take place in the soul from one lifetime to the next. Karma sometimes works in conjunction with this law of balance. If a soul has gone to some extreme in one lifetime, it may have an experience in a later lifetime which temporarily goes to the opposite extreme. In this way, the soul may find its way to a point of evenness and balance. A woman employed as a beautician asked in her past life reading from Casey, "For what did I come into the world plane at this time?" She was told about two previous incarnations in which she'd been waited on by servants and enjoyed a life of leisure. The natural tendency of the soul now was to have a lifetime at the other end of the scale, serving the physical bodies of other people, such as she was doing in her career as a beautician. Another man was described in his reading from Casey as being very unsure of himself. The reading explained that in a previous incarnation, he had exhibited the opposite trait. As an Atlantean, he was very hard-headed and refused to leave with other immigrants despite predictions of catastrophes which destroyed Atlantis. He died in the destructions because of his false sense of self-assuredness. The soul had now incarnated in the 20th century, determined to change this pattern. Its approach was to develop a personality which experienced things from the opposite extreme, lack of certainty and assuredness. The reading said to him, "Thus the entity worries easily. As to that it doesn't know, and as to that it does know." Hopefully this kind of experience would lead him toward an appreciation for the middle ground and greater balance. In yet another example, Casey's reading told a man that he had been an executioner during the French Revolution and had gone about his work with an extreme attitude, total defiance of anyone who rose in protest or rebellion. Interestingly, in the most recent lifetime, his soul had moved to the opposite extreme, being extraordinarily sensitive to persecution in any form. This overly sensitive trait in his new lifetime was part of a process to rebalance himself from old karmic patterns. Notice that in all of these stories, the law of karma worked to reestablish an equilibrium. The conditions, situations, or personality traits were not a matter of punishment. The needed lessons for the soul were being learned by experiencing the other side of the coin, rather than by merely repeating the old pattern until it became too uncomfortable to continue. So what we have observed from Casey's theory of reincarnation and karma can be summarized with these three points. First, karma is not a debt to be paid off, but a memory within the soul. Second, we have created many kinds of memories, and the most frequent ways we experience them are physical health issues, characteristics of temperament, talents, and relationships. And third, meeting those memories is likely to happen in one of two ways, either repeating the pattern from the past or experiencing the opposite condition. But all of this is just theory. No doubt you are wondering how you could get an idea about your own past lives. Should you look for someone today who can give past life readings just the way Casey did? Or are there other methods available? Psychic readings may have a useful role to play for you. However, it is advisable, if you follow this course, to get more than one reading from different psychics. Don't assume that the lifetimes described in your first reading are necessarily accurate. If you find that several psychics describe a particular lifetime without your having given suggestions or clues, then you can accept the idea as more reliable. Also, be on the lookout for two other signs that the past life psychic reading is accurate. One indicator is a feeling of rightness. Ask yourself, do I resonate to what I'm being told? Intuitively, do I sense that it is true of me? If the answer is no, then unfortunately the psychic you've chosen probably wasn't very good at tuning into your soul patterns. Another sign of reliable past life information is that it fits a current need. Ask yourself, does this past life scenario help me to understand some issue in my present life? The best psychic readings connect past life influences to present day challenges. If the purported reincarnation material in your reading is only entertaining or ego-inflating, then be wary. And recognize, too, that you can get important clues about past lives without going to a psychic reader. Often these clues do not give you all the details, such as exactly what years the incarnation happened, or in precisely which country it took place. But maybe that information is not really needed. The point of identifying past life influences is to better understand and deal with demands and difficulties in today's world. Sometimes knowing too much about the past may get you overly focused on the previous incarnation rather than make you better equipped to get on with your current life. To detect active past life influences, begin with childhood attitudes and behaviors. Often soul memories are very expressive in the early years of life as special interests or inexplicable fears. You may want to ask your parents or an older sibling what they remember about you when you were young. Of course, not all past life indicators are limited to childhood. Think about your interests, preferences, and tastes as an adult, too. Are there certain countries to which you feel an attraction? What periods of history are particularly fascinating to you? What kinds of foreign food do you favor? These are merely clues, and by themselves they don't prove anything about one of your previous incarnations. But you may be able to gain useful hints from this kind of questioning. The Casey readings also suggested that you may get insights about your own past lives from dreams. Not every dream is about a previous incarnation, but with greater frequency than you might expect, your dreams probably refer to your karmic patterns. Some past life dreams are literal recalls of experiences from long ago. The characters and action are a vivid depiction of what actually happened to your soul in some other incarnation. More often, though, a past life dream is subtle. The setting of the dream may be modern times and familiar situations, but some symbol in the dream refers to a previous life. French doors may allude to a French lifetime and the influences from that period. A palm tree might point to an incarnation in some tropical country. A coat of armor could refer to a warrior incarnation. Of course, with each of these examples, there are other possible meanings for the symbol. The Casey readings simply invite us to be alert for dreams which indirectly show a soul memory. The natural question that surrounds all of these ideas about reincarnation, karma, and past lives asks, what can we do with this information? How can it be useful in a practical way? Suppose, for example, that you have a long-standing problem in some area of your life. Maybe it's a nagging fear, a health issue, or a difficult relationship with someone. Perhaps you find the idea of reincarnation comforting because it suggests that your problem exists for a purpose. But even if you admit that the situation is karmic and that your soul is responsible for the problem, what do you do next? What can be done about karmic patterns that create obstacles in the present? Casey's readings offer a 5-part strategy for healing past life memories. Each step is something that you can do to make a difference. Ultimately, any kind of healing comes from a power beyond your conscious self. It's what the Casey readings call the influence of grace. But almost always there are things that you can do to harmonize yourself with those healing powers, to open yourself to receive the gift of healing. The first of the 5 is to choose properly an ideal for your life. What did Casey mean by that word? It quickly brings to mind a similar word, idealistic. However, an idealist is often thought of as impractical, dreamy, and utopian. Casey refers to ideals as highly practical and immediately related to daily life situations. Think of an ideal as a focal point for life that you choose, the sense of direction and purpose that you would like to have guiding you in all that you do. An ideal is the central motivation that orients your life. What are some examples of an ideal? It's possible to choose an ideal that is selfish, or one that is more universal and includes your needs and the needs of others. A selfish ideal might be fame. Imagine people who select the drive for notoriety as the guiding force in life, the central motivation in all they think and feel and do. In contrast, imagine other people who choose peace or love or kindness as their ideal. These individuals will not think and behave peacefully, lovingly, or kindly every moment of every day. No one measures up to his or her ideal all the time. But nonetheless, something special happens to anyone who picks an ideal that includes a concern for others and goes beyond the boundaries of selfish desires. According to Casey, simply having made a commitment to that sort of high ideal in spite of failures that are bound to occur begins to awaken healing forces within the soul. The influence of grace can begin to change the way in which we experience some of our karmic patterns. The second part of Casey's healing strategy is to approach a karmic situation with patience and try to understand consciously the lesson that is in it. Often the challenges and troubles we face are created by past life influences, but not as punishment. Things happen the way they do so that we as souls can learn. When we listen to a troublesome situation with more than just our ears and let the difficulty teach us something, then we are freed to have healing forces move in. For example, if you have a long-standing tension in one of your relationships, try asking yourself, "What is this situation teaching me?" Or if you face a strong fear that has always seemed to be with you, ask, "What does this problem force me to learn?" A third ingredient is to act in service to others. The principle of service is a key to the Casey philosophy. It defines the ultimate goal of reincarnation, to attain a state in which souls are enlightened and free. With this definition in mind, think about the following adage mentioned earlier from one reading. You can get to heaven only by leaning on the arm of someone whom you have helped. In other words, service to other people is essential. Caring about others, helping others, is vital to the way we change and heal our own karmic problems. Casey even suggested that if we want the influence of grace to touch us, then we must first act gracefully toward others. Patience, tolerance, kindness. Not because these qualities earn grace, but simply because they open us up to receive the healing forces that are always present and available. You will need to decide what kind of service is best for you. It may not involve a job change to some social services profession. It's the little acts of caring and sensitivity that really matter, and you can do them wherever you find yourself. The fourth step in changing karmic patterns is to foster a certain attitude, one that sees life as continuous. Although reincarnation teaches us that we are souls who have a long and varied past, it also shows that we have a long future ahead, one that is worth preparing for. Healing forces are stimulated as we make a conscious decision to start building and creating right now the conditions that we want for a future lifetime. If your body is bothered by ailments that may be caused by karmic influences, then do what you can to create better health for this lifetime. But also keep an attitude and awareness that right now you are creating and building the kind of body you will have in a future lifetime. Remember that life is continuous and that you are a soul. Keep the long time frame point of view. And finally, the KC readings encourage us all to use prayer as an approach to healing. The most effective way to pray differs from one person to the next, but for anyone, what makes prayer work is sincerity. Whether you pray alone or in a group, silently or aloud, let your prayers express your deepest and most honest feelings. It's not selfish to ask for healing. Selfishness comes in only when we make stipulations and requirements concerning how and when the healing will come. Any kind of karmic difficulties, such as health troubles, paralyzing fears, and painful relationships, can be changed by prayer. These five steps from the KC readings can be a powerful, life-changing blueprint for you. They take reincarnation, karma, and grace out of abstract thinking and into the realm of real-life issues and needs. But these five steps are meaningful only if you actually apply them. To get you started, let's do a short guided imagery experience related to one aspect of your life that may need some healing. This experience will focus on one of your interpersonal relationships. Select one that needs a change for the better. There may be a resentment, a fear, or a hurt that stands in the way of you and this other person getting along the way you might. We are going to assume that there are probably some past life influences that shape what is going on between the two of you. However, the point of this upcoming exercise is not related to any details of the distant past. You don't need to have any clues or hints about specific past lives with this person. Simply pick a relationship that needs some healing. You may want to pause the tape until you've made your choice and have gotten yourself situated in a comfortable place where you won't be disturbed for about 5 minutes. Now close your eyes. And let your attention move to the flowing in and flowing out of your breath. As you did before, let your breathing make you more and more relaxed. But as your body relaxes, observe how your mind is becoming more and more alert. Breathe in peace and centeredness. Exhale tension and stress. You are becoming very relaxed and very much at peace. Now, in your imagination, see the face of this person you have chosen. Look into that person's eyes and feel the presence of this individual. Bring to your mind these facts. This person is a soul, a spiritual being, just like I am. I have probably had many experiences in the distant past with this soul, some of them good, and some not so good. Some of our problems together now may likely be related experiences from our distant past. But all of that can be changed and healed. Now leave your thoughts about this person for just a moment, knowing that we will come back to this individual soon. Ask yourself this question. Ask your deepest and most authentic self this question. What is my ideal in life? For my life as a whole, what motive and purpose do I most want to guide and direct my thoughts, feelings, decisions, and actions? Select a word or descriptive phrase for your ideal. Now let's move to Casey's second step. Think about the person you have chosen. This time, put your attention for a moment upon the issues that most trouble you, the aspects of the relationship that give you the most trouble. Take a moment now to open to patience and understanding. What lessons are you challenged to learn from these difficulties? What is this situation teaching you? Maybe it involves a quality that has come forth from you in order to deal with the problem. Some quality that could be very useful in your life overall. Maybe the lesson involves a new understanding of life or of yourself. Next, let's move on to the third step. Think about the most constructive way you could act in relation to this person. How can you be of service to this soul? It may be in little ways that are subtle, or it may be in major ways that are evident to everyone. take a moment now and imagine that you have been given the spiritual task of helping and serving this other soul. How might you best do it? The fourth ingredient in a program to heal this karmic relationship starts with an attitude on your part. Affirm to yourself, life is continuous. I am a soul, and this other person is a soul. Take a moment and realize that you are likely to have one or many other encounters with this soul in future lives. What kind of relationship would you like to have next time? What can you start thinking, feeling, and doing now that can begin to create that sort of relationship for the future? Perhaps some of these new patterns will begin to appear in this lifetime, but if they don't, you can be sure that these attitudes will have an effect on future experiences. Finally, let's take a few moments to pray for this relationship. Once again, see the face of this person. Whatever way seems most meaningful to you, pray for that soul. Send love or a blessing. Then pray for the relationship itself, that the forces of healing would begin to change the old patterns between the two of you. Now slowly begin to bring your attention back. First, be aware of your breathing once again. With each inhalation, feel yourself coming back closer and closer to your normal waking state. And when you are ready, you can slowly open your eyes, fully alert and refreshed. If you wish, you can pause the tape to get resituated or to make some written notes about your experience. As you can see from all that we've covered, the Edgar Cayce readings have a very insightful and useful interpretation of the theory of reincarnation. The emphasis is always on the practical side. This is a viewpoint on life that can make a difference in the way you see yourself and your challenges. It promotes an attitude that is hopeful and empowering. Reincarnation teaches that you are responsible for your life. But with that sense of responsibility comes the realization that you can do something to make things better. The irony of reincarnation lies in the way it makes us see time. Many people who reject the theory or who are new to it often assume that it leads to a preoccupation with the past. Who was I 3 lifetimes ago? Where have I known this soul before? But instead, people who properly adopt this view of life find that their focus is more and more on the present and the future. They find themselves living in the present with a greater feeling that life is purposeful. They find themselves working toward their goals and ideals with a sense that more than one lifetime is available to them for success. The day-to-day practicality of the theory of reincarnation was emphasized in one reading Cayce gave on the subject. This was not a reading given for a specific individual, but a general reading on reincarnation that gave the broadest and most universal statement about how it works. It is fitting to close with these words from Cayce that underscore his basic message about reincarnation. Only that which produces or makes a citizen a better citizen, a father a better father, a mother a better mother, a neighbor a better neighbor, is constructive. And to find that you only lived, died, and were buried under the cherry tree in grandmother's garden does not make you one whit better a citizen, mother, or father. But to know that you spoke unkindly and suffered for it, and in the present may correct it by being righteous, that is worthwhile. What is righteousness? Just being kind. Just being noble. Just being self-sacrificing. Just being willing to be the hands for the blind, the feet for the lame. These are constructive experiences. You may gain knowledge of same, for incarnations are a fact. How may you prove it? In your daily living.